Live from KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Alaska state troopers have identified the six people who died following Monday's mid-air float plane collision in Ketchikan's George Inlet area. All five on board the Beaver, operated by Mountain Air Service, were killed, including 46-year-old pilot Randy Sullivan of Ketchikan. One passenger on board the Takuan Air Otter was killed in the crash. 10 others survived with varying injuries. On Tuesday afternoon, Jeffrey Kiefer of Ketchikan Volunteer Rescue Squad talked about the search and rescue operation. He says the survivors had gotten onto a nearby beach. Several were put on board a tour boat that had been in the area and were taken to George Inlet Lodge, where ambulances brought them to the hospital. Of the 10 survivors, three remain hospitalized in Ketchikan in fair condition. The four that had been airlifted to Seattle are all in satisfactory condition. Kiefer says the search area for those missing after the initial response covered a large area. They focused on the debris field left by the Beaver.
That debris field was approximately 1,000 feet wide and 2,600 feet long, and that contained various parts of the aircraft. In that debris field was located the tail section parts of the horizontal stabilizers, door sections, a large piece of the fuselage, and then items, life jackets, cushions, seats.
Other parts of the plane were in the water. Kiefer says the extent of the debris field indicates the Beaver broke apart at altitude. National Transportation Safety Board officials said Tuesday that the planes collided at 3,300 feet. According to troopers, the passengers killed in the crash are 56-year-old Simon Brody from New South Wales, Australia, 46-year-old Louis Botha from San Diego, California, 62-year-old Cassandra Webb from St. Louis, Missouri, 39-year-old Ryan Wilk from Utah, and 37-year-old Elsa Wilk from British Columbia. Next of kin and the Canadian and Australian consulates have been notified. Alaska lawmakers are considering expanding a state park to include historic graves of Alaska Natives who died in a World War II internment camp. Coast Alaska's Jacob Resnick reports.
After the Japanese bombed Dutch Harbor in 1942, U.S. authorities forcibly evacuated more than 800 Unungan people from nine villages in the remote western islands ahead of the Japanese advance. University of Alaska Southeast anthropology professor Daniel Monteith says that inhabitants of the Pribilof Islands were interned in makeshift camps in Southeast Alaska.
290 from St. Paul, 190 from St. George were relocated to Funter Bay.
Funter Bay is a remote site on Admiralty Island, more than 1,000 miles away from the Pribilofs. The camp was a shuttered salmon cannery with few provisions and little heat. Martin Stepton told Alaska lawmakers that all four of his grandparents spent the war at Funter Bay in miserable conditions.
Even my grandma used to say, late into her late 90s, she would say things like, oh, I hope it never happens again.
Stepton was testifying in support of a bill to expand a state park to include a cemetery with 32 marked graves.
The value of protecting the social and historical significance of this land will cement the history for good, and we will never have to repeat this history again.
Bill sponsor Representative Sarah Hannon said the cemetery is already on state-owned land, but the Juneau Democrat said she wanted to ensure it would remain open to the public by adding it and surrounding lands to the nearby Funter Bay Marine Park.
The descendants of the families who were buried there, you know, had some real anxiety about whether they would always have access to be able to visit the graves of their family.
The House passed the bill 29-4. It now moves to the Alaska Senate, but it's unlikely to be considered before next year's legislative session. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Jacob Resnick.
As the Alaska Marine Highway System faces deep budget cuts, Skagway residents have been examining the potential to create a locally governed ferry service for the Upper Lynn Canal. KHNS's Henry Leisha reports that a municipal committee has reached out to a research firm to explore the idea further.
Skagway resident Jan Rentmore chairs the municipality's Marine Highway Ad Hoc Committee. She says that Governor Mike Dunleavy's proposed budget cuts could leave Skagway without ferry service. Under the governor's plan, ferry service would end on October 1st. Rentmore says this got her asking about the alternatives available to Skagway if the Alaska Marine Highway System, or AMHS, shuts down.
So there was a lot of talk locally and also, I believe, in Haines about what would it mean to form our own ferry authority.
So Skagway's Marine Highway Ad Hoc Committee reached out to the McDowell Group, a research firm with experience consulting for AMHS. Rentmore says the idea was to create a report explaining what it would take to create a locally governed ferry authority.
If we had to make a decision about trying to save the Marine Highway in Lynn Canal, then we would have a tool. We would have a document that kind of laid out for us what the various steps would be.
In its proposal for the study, the firm says it will consider local governance models that could serve a Skagway-centered ferry service. The proposal points to the Inter-Island Ferry Authority, or IFA, as an example. The public nonprofit corporation provides ferry service between Prince of Wales Island and Ketchikan. It isn't a perfect example. IFA does receive funding from the state, and it relies on AMHS for some of its customer base. But it is a model for local governance. It has a board of directors with representatives from six communities that it serves. Rentmore says she imagines if an independent ferry authority were established for the Upper Lynn Canal, Haines and Skagway would be partners.
I can't imagine any way that it could work if Haines and Skagway weren't in some way partnering on this project. But right now it's just kind of an open general, the report will be an open general discussion of the legislative process to get there.
The McDowell study would also examine potential funding sources, costs, public-private partnerships, and staffing options. The firm is asking for $33,000 to carry out the research. It requires about 90 days to conduct the analysis and prepare a report. The municipality has not indicated one way or another whether it would consider developing a local ferry authority. The Skagway Borough Assembly will discuss whether or not to fund the study at its meeting Thursday evening. In Haines, I'm Henry Leisha.
A federal judge in Anchorage has denied bail to a young man on allegations of illegal firearms possession. An FBI investigation into social media posts threatening to kill racial and religious minorities turned up what prosecutors say was an unlawful machine gun and silencers, as well as almost a dozen other firearms taken from an East Anchorage apartment. During a detention hearing yesterday, attorneys for the Justice Department asked the judge to keep 19-year-old Michael Graves in jail until trial, citing their concerns he poses a threat to the public. An FBI agent gave detailed testimony of investigating Graves after receiving an anonymous tip about extreme online posts. Lawyers showed the court social media posts calling for the killing of Jews and Muslims, a silencer decorated with Nazi symbols, and bumper stickers with iconography associated with white supremacy. Assistant U.S. Attorney Kim Sayers Fay says much of that evidence is protected speech, but it was part of what led law enforcement to discover an illegal firearm.
And we believe that the fact that he possessed these weapons and obtained those weapons at the same time that he was writing things that could be interpreted as hateful and threatening to members of our community showed that he was definitely a danger to the community and should then stay in jail while awaiting trial.
According to prosecutors, Graves possessed a banned device that could have made a Glock handgun into a fully automatic weapon, constituting an illegal machine gun. An FBI agent told the court that a search of Graves' apartment found 11 firearms, along with three silencers and materials that could be used to make more of them, which is a crime. Prosecutors say they do not have evidence of a specific violent plot. Graves' defense team told the court he has no criminal record or history of violence and asked the judge to release him to a third-party custodian, in this case his mother, along with ankle monitoring as conditions for his bail. That request was denied, with the judge saying she believes the posts suggest a will to act that puts the public in jeopardy. An attorney for Graves declined to comment on the hearing. Authorities say four new measles cases have been diagnosed in western Washington. The Washington State Department of Health says two of the cases were in King County and one each in Pierce and Snohomish counties. The health department said the exact exposure information isn't known, but all of those infected spent time at SeaTac Airport. Public health officials had just declared that a months-long Pacific Northwest measles outbreak was over. This is Juno hip-hop duo Radiophonic Jazz with their new single, Aquamarine. The pair stopped by KTOO during Alaska Folk Fest to record this red carpet concert. Radiophonic Jazz is a high school senior, Arius Hoyle, and Juno performing artist Chris Talley. Come on, the calm emotions thunder, all the oceans wonder why your notions under the deep blue for a sea blue gem. A gorgeous number, not the highest, I guess I'm an underdog. This is part of our red carpet concert series. You can watch a video and other red carpet concerts, including Irene Mueller and Revilla, at ktoo.org. And here's a look at the National Weather Service forecast for the Juneau area. Tonight, mostly cloudy, lows in the mid-40s, light winds. Thursday, rain, highs in the mid-50s, light winds. And that is the KTOO News Update for Wednesday, May 15th, 2019. I'm Jeremy Shea.